Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
World-class actor and philanthropist Gary Sinise is going to join us, and then we'll do the news. First, there's LifeLock. If you use the same password on multiple accounts, beware of credential stuffing. That's when cyber criminals get your username and password off the dark web and try to gain access to your accounts and steal your private information. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives every day. We put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cyber criminals could harm your finances and your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they'll send you an alert. It's LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours with LifeLock Identity Theft Protection. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year with promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
It's time for the most epic weekend of the year. Saturday, June 18th, it's the Carolla Family Barbecue 2022. Head over to Carolla Drinks to be the first to get your tickets to the Carolla Family Barbecue. This year, headlined by the band Lit. Your ticket includes booze, barbecue, bands, and of course, time to hang out with the Carolla family, all the lackeys, and some of your favorite friends and comedians on the show. Don't wait to buy tickets to this event because it will sell out. Wine Case Club members are automatically guaranteed tickets. And if you're in the mood to make a weekend out of it, join Lynette and all your favorite lackeys for the Mangria Bar Crawl Los Angeles the night before the barbecue. All tickets and information can be found online at CorollaDrinks.com.
It's time for Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
Stupid is stupid dog.
If you said Forrest Gump.
Stupid is stupid does.
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
Gary Sinise is here. Patriot, philanthropist, musician, actor, Gary Sinise. Good to talk to you again, my friend.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me, Adam. Hey, hi, everybody.
I've seen Gary's band perform two times. Once at Coronado for the speed week they would have over there on the base. I was doing a vintage race and just ran into Gary performing for the troops. And then once again, I think at CBS Radford during maybe a 4th of July. Does that sound right?
Well, that was probably something I did every year when I was working on CSI New York. I used to bring the band in about halfway through the season and set up a stage and just play for the whole lot. And you probably came to one of those.
It must have been that. By the way, we got a virtual charity event to talk about, Gary Sinise Foundation Snowball Express. Saturday, go to his website and GarySiniseFoundation.org for more info. So we were talking about Disneyland and Disney World, and you used to take like 1,800 kids there every year.
Well, what we would be taking them this year if it wasn't for COVID. This is something I've been involved with going back to 2007, and these are our Gold Star children, families of our fallen. And we started taking them to Disneyland back in 06, and then in 09, we moved it to Dallas because American Airlines is one of our big travel sponsors. They provide all these airplanes. I mean, literally, they'll provide 12 charters and multiple tickets to fly these Gold Star families in for an event. And we did it in Dallas because that's the kind of hub of American Airlines. And then we wanted to move it to Disney World and shake it up a bit. After 9 years in Dallas, we wanted to move it. And I have a good relationship with Disney. We started to make things happen. And so in 2018, we took over 1,000 kids to Disney. We did the same thing after we did the same thing in 2019. And these are kids plus guardians and spouses, surviving spouses. So probably 1,800 people in total. And that costs a lot more money. So we folded that organization, Snowball Express, into the Gary Sinise Foundation as a program. And then COVID hit last year and we couldn't take the kids. So we did a virtual event last year. And unfortunately, we can't take them this year. So we're doing a virtual event this year where over 2,000 families will tune in online to this big day-long show that we put together for the families, just a way to bring them together, to be able to show our love to them and our support for them and to give them some joy right before Christmas time. It's been a marvelous, wonderful blessing to be able to support these kids. They're going through a lot.
Yeah,
and they struggle. And unfortunately, every year we have new kids.
Sure. I'm looking at last year's virtual event, had Angelina Jolie, Keanu Reeves, Tom Hanks. How'd you get his number? Jimmy Kimmel, what the hell? I thought you had A-listers on this. Chris Pratt, Bryce Dallas Howard. What are they doing? Are they performing? Are they reading poems? Are they singing?
No.
What? How does the virtual event work with the celebrities?
Yeah, we put the word out last year to... I sent letters, made phone calls. We just reach out to folks in the business to send in messages to the kids. And so they're just little short messages, usually, supportive messages to the kids and to the families that we appreciate them. We don't forget about what they're going through. We try to lift them up. Last year, Chris Pratt, he was on the set of Jurassic Park and with Bryce Dallas Howard, and they did a whole thing on the set. And, you know, we do a lot of fun things. People do things from their TV shows and whatnot. And that really, the whole thing is to lift these kids up. And, you know, when you get these messages from people that you see on television and in the movies, and you think, oh, wow, they know I exist. They know I'm out here. They're sending me a personal message. That can lift them up. And so that's what all that was about. We had a lot of people last year, Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood. And
my God,
I mean, you name it. A lot of people were on there.
Yeah. Well, Gary's a hard guy to say no to. And the Gold Star families and the kids, you know, I don't know.
What kind of monster do you have to
Yeah.
be?
Forrest Gump's one of my favorites. And I'm always curious if people know what they're making when they're making it. Like if you, sometimes people go, oh, we knew we had something special here. And then Sometimes people go, I didn't have the whole script. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know what was going on. Or they added a bunch of stuff and, you know, in post that I wasn't even aware of. What was the Forrest Gump process for you?
You know what? There's that show. Have you seen this? I think it's Netflix. It's called The Movies That Made Us. Have you ever seen
it? It's really fun. Mm-hmm.
They're like a series of documentaries. And recently they did one on Forrest Gump. And I watched it. And there were things in that that I had no idea were going on behind the scenes of the making of the film. I mean, I knew there was disruption because the dailies were coming back to the studio and, you know, one day we're over here shooting one thing. The other day we're over here. Now we're on a bench with a guy who's talking about stuff and the studio couldn't make sense out of it. And so they were worried. They didn't really know what was happening, but Tom Hanks and Bob Zemeckis were very, very dedicated to it. They knew we had something. They worked on the weekends. I mean, they had to get a bunch of shooting in and they didn't have time in the regular schedule. So Tom said, well, let's do it on the weekend. And Bob said, okay. So they took a skeleton crew, you know, all the shots of him like running around different places around the country. They would get on an airplane on, you know, after shooting all week and get on an airplane and fly with a skeleton crew and shoot Tom running around somewhere, you know, that kind of thing. So they really were dedicated. They knew we had something. I knew it was feeling good and I was having a good time making it and that we were in good company there with Bob Zemeckis and a great screenplay and Tom Hanks. But could we predict, you know, what it would turn out like? No, not really. Because if you look at each of those individual stories, you've got Jenny and Forrest over here and they're doing their own thing. And then Mama and Forrest over here, and then Bubba and Forrest, and Lieutenant Dan and Forrest. And so I really didn't know what Sally Field was doing in the movie. I never saw any of her work, and I was in one little scene at the wedding. Same thing with Robin Wright. I didn't know what she was doing. I wasn't watching the dailies. So when I went and saw the movie for the first time, and when all of us saw the movie for the first time, Tom was the only one who really knew what he was doing with everybody because he was in every scene. But when I saw it for the first time put together, then I could see what everybody was doing, and it was magnificent. I mean, we all stood up at the end of that first little screening in a little tiny screening room, and everybody looked at each other with a big smile on their face, and we knew we were in a good movie. But who knew that it would turn into such a classic and live on and on and on the way it has?
Was that based on something? Based on a book?
Yeah. It was based on a book written by a guy named Winston Groom, who's actually a Vietnam veteran. And the Lieutenant Dan character is based on a guy in a wheelchair that got shot up in Vietnam and a friend of his. And so he based a lot of it on things from his own life.
What is it? Did you have to audition for that?
Yes. Yeah. I'd only done a couple of movies before that. I was a theater guy from Chicago, and I'd done a movie version of Mice and Men with John Malkovich.
Love that.
And done a couple other little things, but not much. So I went audition like a lot of other people, and I got the part. So I think they saw Mice and Men, and that's why they brought me in.
How many, Lieutenant Dan Band, I was maybe think of, remember?
The Dan Band.
The Dan Band. For a second. Are you guys, you traveling around? Are you playing gigs? Like how often are you getting out there?
We've done over 530 shows for the military in the last 18 years, and we had this slow. I mean, we were nonstop. I was going everywhere, and then we did a concert last year in February. We always go to Naval Medical Center down in San Diego, and we set up a stage outside of the hospital, and we bring the patients out, and we provide food and everything. We do a thing that we have at the Gary Sinise Foundation called our Invincible Spirit Festivals, and we do them at hospitals all over. So we usually kind of start our year with this February show at the hospital. We did that one last year, and then, you know, that we right did before. It in early February, and bang, you know, COVID hit, everything shuts down. I remember it was just coming on, and some of our staff members had some travel plans to go places. And I said, no, this sounds like it's going to be really serious. You're not getting on planes to go anywhere. And sure enough, within days, everything got shut down, and, you know, airline travel, everything was shutting down. So the only thing we did last year besides that hospital show was we recorded a concert. We brought the band into California. We rented a studio here, and we recorded a concert that we could play at the virtual Snowball Express event last year. This year, we've only played because of COVID and a lot of the bases not really knowing how to manage crowds and not really wanting to put people together. We've only done one concert. We did one early November at Nellis Air Force Base, and then we flew to Anaheim and we got the band together, and we shot two nights for our virtual Snowball event this year. So my concert will be, part of the finale of the day coming up on Saturday when, you know, that's how I got started with Snowball Express. I donated my band, started bringing my band to play for the kids. So it's just part of the event every single year.
I remember the Coronado event, which they don't have anymore, sadly, the race, blew a hole in the side of my engine. Blew up the engine. Just blew. You can blow up an engine, but this had a hole in the side of it.
You're not blaming Gary, are you?
It was kind of. It was behind his bus where he was parked. I mean, I was out on the track.
But, okay, this is uncomfortable.
And then it was right at the end of the straightaway before you turn right, and I just kept going. I just coasted a very long distance because the worst thing you can do is be hit by another car if you're too close to the action. And they don't have any barriers up at the Coronado. It's a wide open airfield with a bunch of cones.
Are you telling the tale of woe so you can get in on Disneyland next time?
I need a gig. I need you to come play for me because I had to pay to rebuild this engine. Now, I got yelled at for coasting too far by the guys who tow you back. And then I had nothing to do but go hang out with Gary on his bus and watch
Wait, was
those
that,
guys
was
play.
That before or after my concert, that blowout?
Geez, I'm trying to think. I mean, would you play while they were racing? If it sounds too loud or
I don't
something.
Know. We've played with F-16s flying over our heads.
Oh, well, that's yeah, that's true. I was just I was happy to have something to do now that I was sidelined.
Speaking of flying, I think everyone, you'd be hard pressed to find someone who's not a fan of Apollo 13. But I love it because it's one of those movies where you know what's going to happen. It's well documented. There are no surprises in that movie. It's part of history, and yet it is a white knuckle ride. What was that like? Did you talk to Ken Mattingly before playing him? Are you still in touch with him? How did that work for you?
No, I did not talk to him before. The first time I met him was at I think the first screening of that was in Houston.
At
Johnson Space Center, and that's when I met Ken. There was a dinner before the screening or something, and I met him that night. But we didn't have any communication while I was making the movie at all.
Was that intentional, or was he standoffish, or how was the process?
No. I think I was just tuning into the script and trying to figure stuff out. And you know, we had some technical advisors on the movie that were advising us that were astronauts, a guy named Dave Scott. He was one of the moon guys. And so they were working directly with us. And I was focused on how they were guiding us technically and trying to just, you know, pay attention to what Ron wanted me to do.
Wow. It's one of the all-time great films.
And again, you know, there's no surprises.
Right.
And
it's like
a white
Titanic
ride.
Right.
Yeah. But and how long after Forrest Gump was that, or before? It was right there.
I got cast in the movie before Forrest Gump opened, and I remember going to the first big Hollywood screening that they had. The one I mentioned earlier was just a small one for the cast, but this was the big premiere, and it was in the big theater at Paramount, and I had just been cast in Apollo 13, and Ron Howard was at the big premiere, and he said, "Well, I'm glad I cast you." I remember that.
I mean, think about two back-to-back movies.
Hits.
I mean, oh my God, Apollo 13.
Tom Hanks was on a real serious glide there because he had done Philadelphia and won an Oscar for that. He did, Forrest Gump, Apollo 13. I mean, he was just rocking there.
Three straight Best Actor nominations.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic.
Yeah. By all accounts, or you would know, but seems like just a guy. He's got a lot of Hanks, at least.
A
lot of regular dude in him.
Yeah. John's a good guy. And he's been, actually, he did one of those videos last year for us. For the kids, and he's been a supporter of my foundation, the Gary Sinise Foundation, and been a good friend. And we had such a good time in the 90s. I did three movies actually with them, The Green Mile, just a small part in The Green Mile, but it was a good day on the set with him.
Sorry, Gina, were you going to ask something?
Yeah, just curious because your path is so inspiring and I'm sure a lot of us do little micro, you know, size things of what you do. And it's so cool. I'm wondering, with all of your success as an actor and, you know, being so well known, at what point did you kind of look in the mirror and say, I think I got more in me and I don't think I'm using it the way I want to use it and I want to go into philanthropy?
Yeah, I would say, kind of things in the 80s and 90s sort of teed me up to to get more involved and to take action after September 11th. That no question. You know, the last time I came on your show, my book was just coming out. And I think you were one of the first interviews that I did for my book, and it's called Grateful American, A Journey from Self to Service. And there's a chapter in the book called Turning Point. And it really is the September 11th chapter. What happened to me emotionally? Where my interests shifted, and how I went from kind of this focus on my acting career and building a theater company and doing all that kind of thing and starting in the movies and everything, to just taking all of that and shifting it into service work. And I wanted to help the men and women who were deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan. I'd been involved with Vietnam veterans going back years and years, got involved with the Disabled American Veterans Organization in the 90s after I played the wounded guy in Forrest Gump, started supporting them. And I just felt like I don't want to sit around and just, you know, not do anything. I want to help these people that are deploying, and they're getting hurt. You know, they're getting hurt. We're losing them. Families are losing their loved ones here in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I just didn't want to sit around and do nothing. So it manifested into much more than I could have predicted, you know, way back when, sure, when I started.
What's your family history with service or the military? I can't remember if we talked about that before, or is there any?
Yeah, it's pretty extensive. So I would say that's where it starts. My grandfather, World War I, drove an ambulance in France on the front line in the Battle of the Argonne. Whoa. The Battle of the Argonne is, in American history, is, I mean, we've never lost more people in one battle than that. It was over 26,000 lost in that. And he was driving an ambulance through all that craziness. Then he had three sons. Two served in World War II, and my dad served in the Navy. My dad was the youngest of the three, and he served in the Navy during the Korean War. Then I met my beautiful wife, Moira. She had two brothers who served in Vietnam. She had a sister served in the Army who married a Vietnam veteran who's, wow, served in the Army for over 20 years. They had a son who's, you know, served in the Army, went to Afghanistan twice. A lot of veterans in my family. So it kind of starts there. And I would say this, the Vietnam veterans on my wife's side of the family were the ones, because they were just slightly older than I was. My dad, my grandfather, my uncles, by the time I was old enough, they were well beyond World War II and Korea and everything. They never talked about any of them. But it was the Vietnam veteran side that really kind of woke me up. And you know, I just started thinking about how oblivious I was as a high school kid in the early 70s to what our Vietnam veterans were going through. And then I met Vietnam veterans and they told me. And I felt kind of guilty about it, that I had been so unaware. And so I just took up the charge in the 80s to try to do something for our Vietnam veterans. And then I played one in the 90s. And then I was teed up for September 11th to go all in.
So you were on the Vietnam veteran bandwagon before Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah. The Vietnam veterans in my family really opened my eyes back in the early 80s. And so I started supporting locally. I had a theater company, Steppenwolf, in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And, nothing.
I was the, that little thing. I was the artistic director, and I was starting to direct more of the plays. And I wanted to find something that was would tell the story of Vietnam, would tell the story of Vietnam veterans and what they were going through. And I found this play that was written by a group of Vietnam veterans. And they kind of wrote it as a sort of cathartic, sort of healing, I got to get this stuff out kind of therapy. And it turned into this beautiful, powerful play. And I ended up doing it in Chicago. And then we would invite veterans to come for free, and it turned into a whole thing. And that really began my veterans work back in the 80s in Chicago.
What was it called?
The play was called Tracers. I write about it in my book, Grateful American. And it was first done in 1980 out in Los Angeles. And I read about it and I flew out from Chicago and went and saw it. I was blown away by it. And they finally gave me the rights to do it in Chicago. And that really started the focus on trying to help veterans. I never thought at that time, you know, that I would, you know, end up doing it as a life's mission, but I didn't know what I was going to do beyond theater at that point either. And the success in the movie and television business really gave me a lot of resources to do a lot of wonderful things, including building the Gary Sinise Foundation.
Well, you just earned yourself a plug. Go to the website, GarySiniseFoundation.org, for more info. Doing the Lord's work. Mm-hmm. We need more Gary Sinise in the world. I hope to see you performing again in person as soon as you guys are out and doing it again, Gary.
I'll look forward to that. I hope you can make it, Adam. I'll let you know.
All right. Thank you, Gary Sinise. Let me hit Edmonds here. Thanks to Edmonds for sponsoring this show. There's car shortages out there and a lot of increased demand. Edmunds has been taking the stress out of car shopping for over 50 years, keeping track of everything happening in the market out there to help you shop with confidence. There's a huge opportunity to trade in or sell your vehicle now to maximize the cash for your next purchase, because there's a premium on previously owned cars. Get an instant cash offer for your trade-in online at Edmunds. Spend less time stressing at the dealership. Get most of shopping done without leaving your home with Edmunds. Am I right, Dawson?
Car shopping can be stressful. Edmunds is here to help. Visit Edmunds.com to get your free online appraisal today and start searching for vehicles in your area. That's EDMUNDS.com. For cars, there's Edmunds.
All right. We got the news, and we'll do that right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking, viral, weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden, Kamala. Meet news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Gino, can I jump in with some breaking local news? I was wrong. Tom Hanks, not his third consecutive nomination. He did not get nominated for Apollo 13, but Forrest Gump was his third nomination, not consecutive.
Thank you. It was bothering me.
It was bothering me.
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. So I don't think this is going to be shocking to anyone, but the homicide numbers are up across the country this year, and 12 major cities have already broken records with three more weeks to go in the year. Violent crime data shows. Any guesses what city is leading the race?
Well,
total or per capita, or does it matter?
I'll tell you. I'll 739 homicides by the end of November, which is up 3% from last year.
Well, you know, we are always kind of talking about crime. There's certain cities, you know, we're talking about Chicago, but like quietly St. Louis and Baltimore. DC.
True, but don't
DC.
Sleep on Chicago.
Don't sleep on Chicago. All right. I know Philly's up a lot, too.
You're guessing right at the top. Chicago, Philadelphia, Columbus, Ohio, Indianapolis, Louisville, Portland, all breaking records. Some cities broke
records.
Portland, Oregon.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So see you soon. According to crime experts, the rise in homicides likely connected to a strain on police staffing, which has caused a decline in arrests. A few cities like Minneapolis and Milwaukee are on the brink of breaking records as well. So go team.
Fingers We're going to talk to Alex Villanueva.
I'm very excited about this.
The sheriff out here who's not dancing for the governor, I believe is the way I would
Has a lot of independent thoughts.
Yeah, I think I've seen him on the news every once in a while, but I don't know how much he was a part of cleaning up Venice, I think. But
is Venice clean?
Well, they made a big move on the homeless.
Oh.
The homeless, they just literally just took over the beach. And then at some point, you know, the homeless advocates, mm-hmm. which, again, that doesn't make you an expert. And by the way, how is it I know what side you're going to land on with homelessness. Like, where's the advocate that goes, we're going to get them cleaned up, we're going to get them fucking straightened up and sobered up, we're going to rebuild them, we're going to put them in camps, they got to work, they got to learn a trade. How come that's never it? How come the advocate is just leaving the fuck alone? Yeah. I mean, it's basically,
let them flop.
What kind of advocate is that?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a dude sleeping on somebody's porch. I'm an advocate for that guy. Leave him alone. Well, what kind of advocate is he? Like, what if there was that... Like, what if you're an advocate for kids and the kid was just a failing student in the seventh grade? And,
it's his choice.
Let him go.
And your process was to leave him alone?
Yeah.
Let him play out.
You get an Adam Carolla.
Right. That's what you end up with. Some kid looking at Frisky sleeping on the floor, for Christ's sake. So
the disappearing Frisky.
Yeah, he went into Venice earlier this year, like wearing the cowboy hat, and was like, "I'm going to make this."
And the city council was like, "You can't, you know." And he was like, "Fuck you! Name. Someone's got to do something. All your plans. It's a scary world, but it ties into the violence, which is we've taken this shift of like we got to sit down and talk about things all the time, you know, systemic this and reasons that. Before you know it, it's like one, we're reimagining policing or reimagining everything. It's like the guys with the guns are just killing more people while you guys are having this sort of esoteric discussions about how we're going to reimagine things.
Right.
And the homeless guy's not going anywhere while you're all reimagining this. At some point, got to get the boots on the ground.
Yeah, I don't know about Venice, but I'll be interested to ask Villanueva, because at least in my neighborhood, a couple of miles inland, they've cleared out the homeless under the freeway a couple of times since that law passed.
Same. It's also Coldwater. And Brian, your grandma's Villanueva.
I'm sorry. Yes,
The thing about it is too. It's like everyone sits around and goes, "Oh, no!" This, you know, everyone always argues over the process. Like, "Oh, this is not going to work. We can't do this, or it's not going to work, or I can't do that." And then at some point, they go, "Clean up the fucking park," and then 2 days later, it's clean. Right. Like, you can do these things.
Very accomplishable.
It's pretty doable.
And my big question remains: when the Olympics comes here, how quickly is all this going to be, quote unquote, solved?
There's going to be some scrambling.
Yeah,
you're right.
We're on the world stage, and they know it's embarrassing, but they're kind of blind to it. But they're not going to allow that when the world is looking at Los Angeles.
Yeah, here's the problem that we're having. There's like defund this and pull back that. There's this false premise of like, oh, people are just getting caught into the system. Mm-hmm. Like it's the combine and your rabbit and Vinny's doc running in front of it. It's not the school to prison pipeline. Is there a school to prison pipeline? How do you get sucked into the school to prison pipeline? Like, people are involved with crime, people. That's why they're getting into the system. Now we can go, well, what are some reasons why they're getting involved with crime? Maybe they don't have a dad around. Maybe there's missing some discipline. Maybe they need some more structure. But it didn't just fall into a prison when they stepped off their porch. So it's just like they're getting involved with this. And then we go.
Prison combine.
The school to prison combine. And DeColdest.
DeColdest, that's right.
Would probably excel in that different kind of combine. But so then we go again. The solving of the problem, it can be, you know, why are all these people failing math? I don't know. Get rid of the tests. I don't know. Why are all these people in prison? I don't know. Get rid of the cops. Okay.
Problem solved.
This is not, by the way, people in positions of power, this is no way to solve any problem ever. And then they step back. Now, the thing about the get rid of the tests group, that takes between, you know, 11 and 26 years to hash out. This shit's a fucking light switch. Yeah. Pull the cops back, murder's up. Boom.
You see the results.
It's fast. Yeah. And so then people go, oh, okay, we need to do something about this because it's kind of in your face. It's year-end average. Yep. It's up, you know, it's double the amount. It's all statistical. It's figuring out. The other horrible ideas, that's just cancer. That's just a slow burn. The people you're trying to help fall further and further behind. But it's not no video on the news that night of, you know, someone rich in Beverly Hills, a wife was shot and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So good. It doesn't work. And listen, if you just want to fucking talk about systemic this and we, you know, systemic, like everyone wants to get to the problems. Like, we want to figure out what's going on in the border. Well, all right, we'll go to Nicaragua and we'll figure out the root causes. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a systemic and a root, systemic and a root, systemic and a root. Not when it comes to violent crime. That's just weird. Cops and jails.
It is what it is. What are you going to do?
Cops and jails are the end.
We're much less interested in getting to the
beginning
root
is
system.
Why do you have a 14-year-old who wants to shoot a stranger?
Right.
Where did that kid come from? Let's get root. Let's get a little root now. Start talking about the family.
I don't know about the governor because he's whack job. But in Garcetti's case, is it stupid or liar? Because you have to be embarrassed to be in charge of this city, and he doesn't seem embarrassed.
I don't think he's stupid. I think he knows he's just doing enough to tread water. You know what I mean?
I have the same thing. Like, I could not drive around and see massive amount of garbage and graffiti and homeless humanity just
full
splayed all over the place, and plywood and Visqueen and plastic tarps on every freeway and every underpass and overpass. If I ran the city, I would go. Look, I go insane over the coffee mugs. Right. Like, well, who's in charge here? What's going on?
Yeah,
this is fucking horrible.
Rinse out the homeless before you use them.
It's weird. I don't know what era we're in, but it's some bizarre world, and it's like I'm watching Gavin Newsom on The Daily Show last night, and he's talking about being dyslexic. Ugh. Okay.
Hard scrabble childhood.
I don't know, when did being dyslexic become like a point of pride for everyone? Oh, good. A governor can't read. That's awesome. Can you do a simple multiplication, or is that off the table too, you fucking dunce? Like I said, we have these fucking retards in Burbank. Like, I was a homeless person. Oh, I'm beaming with pride now. Oh, because I've always said, you want to get something done, give it to the homeless.
Notorious.
Just fucking idiots. Yeah, who's the fucking idiot who's on the stupid Burbank? I'm on the spectrum of autism. I lived in my Winnebago for 10 years. Oh, great. You're the guy I want making decisions. Fucking awesome. This point of pride. Like, oh, great. The governor can't read. It's good.
Constantine.
Ugh, he's fucking wearing it like some sort of badge. By the way, they just do it so you leave him alone. Fuck you. Go get another job. Go fucking pick a garbage at the fucking park, you idiot. I don't need you setting policies. You're the guys who ran fucking Tinhorn Flats out of business. Maybe you have a little mental issue. I feel sorry for you. Get some medication and get a new gig. Get a job at a fucking Chipotle in Glendale. We don't do damage. We don't get to make decisions. So Newsom is up there and he's like, I'm dyslexic, and he's really mad about the school system. The system is failing. The school system. All right, how about school choice? But you're all fucking mobbed up with the teachers' unions, and you don't want school choice.
If only someone could do something about it.
Yeah. Oh, God. Now we're at the point where they preside over the city that's setting a record for murders, and they go, this is an outrage. It's like
something else they done.
Jesus Christ.
I feel bad because this is the city I was born in, but are we going to have like some armed guards at our Portland show? Because I feel like we need it.
I got to tell you, like that. People are a little
we
bit.
We got a pipe fitter coming.
People are a little bit freaked out. Like, I'm starting to hear talk about, I'm going to get a taser and I don't want to go to this show in Hollywood on Friday nights. Like a tough neighbor. It's a little dark there. Like,
that's right.
I've never heard that kind of talk here in Los Angeles. Starting to hear it now.
Absolutely. I got two DMs from two people in the Portland area saying, hey, are you guys sure you want to come here? Okay, we'll be fine.
We got Mike August.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We'll fight anyone on the street.
That's exactly right.
Hey,
I feel better.
Quick interjection. Can you pull your shorts down? I can almost see your nuts.
Seen Paul?
Yeah, they're hugging. They're hugging the nuts.
Let's see.
How come you get the front row seat?
I got fired up.
I know it. Believe me, the listeners are better off for it. But I'm doing less to look at the sack.
Well, you know when a guy's getting down to work, he rolls his sleeves up. I do that with upper thigh.
About these homeless.
I think my X chair. I think the more I get animated,
don't blame the chair.
It pulls up when
grippy.
I get animated.
Still grippy.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
There you go. Here we go. We're back.
Must we continue? Okay, let's move on. Let's move on to something that we all want to see. Norman Lear and Jimmy Kimmel kicked off the third live in front of a studio audience special Tuesday night with Facts of Life and Different Strokes, awesome. The Facts of Life cast, which we talked about, include Jennifer Aniston as Blair, Catherine Hahn as Jo, Alison Tolman as Natalie, Gabrielle Union as Tootie, and Ann Dowd steals the show as Mrs. Garrett. She was on both shows, of course. They recreated a real episode.
Is Mrs. Garrett black now?
No.
Oh, who was... Are we doing some racial swapping?
Or I don't
we,
remember any, unless
or
I missed
it. Or is it the other show? Is it a Facts? Are there Facts of Life in different
streams? Yeah, I mean, I don't remember any unless I missed something.
Well, you saw it. I didn't see it. Well, maybe it's the maybe there's a Facts of Life. Don't they usually swap out a race or two?
Well, they've done the Jefferson. Like, I don't think so.
But they've done predominantly black cat or shows, I guess.
Right.
Maybe I'm thinking Annie.
Oh, yes.
You got a black
Annie. Annie. Totally yeah. thinking of Annie. So this
here's what I'm leaning to.
Yeah.
We'll give you Annie.
Great. Okay.
We'd like Tootie in exchange.
Oh, this is like
leave a penny, take a penny.
Draft. Yeah.
We need a red-haired chick playing Tootie.
Yeah, right.
Because you got Annie.
Right.
And we gave you Annie. Only that's a better
curly,
Annie's
freckle
bigger
face.
Than Tootie.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
You got the Karate Kid. Don't fucking complain.
Yeah, you want balance, don't you?
That's right.
Let's just give us Tootie.
Okay.
That's all.
It's fair. Yeah. It's more than fair.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
It makes sense.
Well, this was a real episode from the, let's see, what season? Third season.
Oh, they did like a, okay.
A real episode called Kids Can Be Cruel. It was phenomenal. And there were some special guest stars. They had Jason Bateman and Will Arnett as like the two cool guys from, was it Bates? I think Bates was the boys' school, like across the way from Eastland School. And John Stewart as the brace-faced Rocky Price, who was kind of the butt of everyone's joke because he had the headgear.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a clip from the episode where Mrs. Garrett yells at the kids, the girls, for playing a joke on Rocky.
Let's see.
Actual episode?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
No, this is the reenactment.
Carl.
It is?
This is your dinner.
Oh,
you
wow.
You paid for it.
Well, it all goes to charity. I gotta go. I think I gotta adjust the stereo. I hear too much pain. I mean bass.
Oh.
There goes one very fine boy.
And a very sad one, too, Blair.
Don't all look at me like it's my fault. I'm an injured party here, too.
Forget it. I'm going to have dinner with Carl.
Catherine Hahn.
Listen,
it's Joe.
If anyone should...
She's very Joey.
Yes.
Carl paid for this, and part of the package was a charming, lovable dinner date, and that's me!
Catherine Hahn's a goddamn treasure.
Yes. Look at her.
She was great.
I'm having lunch with Carl. Don't do him any favors. Go. He paid to have dinner with me. Besides, someone might come up with the most ridiculous idea that he chose you over me.
So that was the big ending. Really fun, really well done. The guys were funny. Everybody played it straight. I don't remember anyone breaking up in the middle, which it was just a really, really fun episode. And of course, at the end of that episode, they interviewed, I think Jimmy interviewed Lisa Welchel, who was Blair, you know, originally, and
Please.
Kim Fields, and not only Mindy Cohn.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
original cast,
Lisa Welchel. Had to show up in her original Eastland schoolgirl outfit.
You're talking.
Just
really?
To show that everything's
season
kept
one
in
or
place.
Season four, because that is a different.
That's a good point.
They make car covers for two seaters and they make them for Winnebagos as well. But it's still a car cover.
Are those the only two they make?
they make them in
the
between.
The implication is that
nice sedan.
Size. Okay,
yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
She looked very nice.
Hey, I got the. I had a few milestones. I had my raft box relationship going. I had
one-way
the Adrian Barbeau black and white picture. And then when I was 16, I had the sitting next to Lisa Welchel at Beth Ringwald's Sweet 16.
Oh, my God. You know how many boys would give an actual arm to be in that position?
Yeah, I mean, I was...
I'd have tried to give his arm.
I had...
Donate.
I had... you know, no game at all. I just remember just sitting there, just sort of, it's at a restaurant. It still may be there on Ventura Boulevard, an Indian restaurant called like the Marrakesh Express or the Marrakesh, or that movie, or Marrakesh, Moroccan, I guess. It was a Marrakesh something. It was on Ventura Boulevard. It was, you know, weirdo food when you're,
sure, yeah, totally,
16.
Yeah. Too exotic.
Yeah. But kind of hip or artsy something. And then we sat on the ground on like pillows and
maybe
stuff.
Like,
and
I was
just staring at Lisa Welchel.
Was she every bit as dreamy as she seemed? Did she have the flowing Prel hair?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Big Prel hair.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to show you an even shorter clip from the Different Strokes episode. That was really fun. Boys to Men came out and performed. Todd Bridges introduced them. Boys to Men came out and performed the theme song. That was John Lithgow as Mr. Drummond. Damon Wayans as Willis, and of course Kevin Hart as Arnold, and a very special guest appearance by Snoop Dogg, who plays Willis's classmate. Here's a short clip.
Hey, what are you guys about to do?
Vernon's helping me with my class project. Vernon takes pictures for the school paper up in Harlem.
Yeah, that's right. And a picture from Vernon is worth 1,000 words. Yeah.
Well, I've seen those pictures, Vernon, and the first word that comes to mind is blurry.
Arnold, take your little A out of here.
Hey, Vernon, Willis, I told you, this is my room, too.
See, that's the problem. I got no quiet, I got no privacy, I got nowhere to go to think my deep thoughts.
What you talking about, Willis?
Yeah. How goes wild.
It's all you needed, just a good catchphrase.
Kiss my grits.
Yeah, man. Jesus. Perfect.
No, it was fun. These are like, this is such a great, you know, fun thing.
Well,
it's like, just...
and we're talking about vinyl.
Yeah,
at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
Adrian Barbeau, Raft Boxes. This is all nostalgia. Yeah, it's kind of fun.
It's awesome. Let's get into the Sports Person of the Year, shall we? That's what it's called now on Sports Illustrated. And no huge surprise.
I'd like to talk to the government of Haiti and just go, here's what we're up to.
Yeah.
Here's what we kind of occupy ourselves revisiting sitcoms from the 70s.
Beloved things from our...
What are you guys up to?
We're so done innovating, we have to go back.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, we're done.
Take a look back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Sports Person of the Year for this year is...
Megan Rapinoe.
Tom Brady. Award given annually to an athlete, coach, or team best representing the spirit of sportsmanship and character and performance. Brady previously received the honor as a Patriot in 2005, following his third Super Bowl title. Bleacher Report says the 44-year-old is often considered the greatest of all time, also holds various NFL records, including for passing yards, passing touchdowns, and the most Super Bowl titles of any player in league history. So I guess that was kind of an easy pick.
I was talking to Sonny about this last night, and I was like, what? No? Does he have more Super Bowl titles than any franchise?
He's got seven individually, right?
Seven individually.
And yeah, no one other. No, more than the Patriots, obviously. Yeah, because they won six with the Patriots.
Patriots have six overall. I mean, he's a quarterback who's playing in the league, who's got more Super Bowls than any other franchise
than the teams.
He's playing.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's fucking crazy. Then we took a deep dive on Montana and Young.
Mm-hmm. Never lost Super Bowl.
Yep. And then, you know, I was saying, well, you know, Young was on the bench for a while with Montana, and Aaron Rodgers was on the bench, I think, 3 years. We looked it up.
That sounds about right, yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of talent to be riding the pine.
And you're basically your prime.
Yeah.
It's about what Mahomes did the first 3 years.
But you kind of wonder if that first year is a good year to spend on the bench. I feel like sometimes these guys get thrown in, they get busted up, or they get whatever. Like, wouldn't you want them just kind of shadowing
observing
a great, especially if you have a great in front of them?
Great will always, the this has been studied before, a great will always kind of rise to the top. You have Peyton Manning, who started as, you know, as a rookie, went 3-13, had a terrible season, and look what happened to him. Then you have, you know, the Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers of the world who sat and came in and had great careers.
Steve Youngs.
Yeah. So some guys can do it. Some guys don't.
But
greatness will always rise at the top.
Yeah, I agree. It's just if the franchise is shit and your offensive line is shit and you're just running for your life or you get injured, like Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow's got injured or something.
He did last year. He busted up his knee. Yeah.
How were the Buccaneers before Brady? Were they like top half?
They've been good in the past. They won a Super Bowl. They've been the worst team in football at the beginning.
No more range than the old Bucs.
Right.
But him going there recently, was that like a punchline?
No, they were good and needed that last piece.
I see.
Kind of weak quarterback.
I see. Mm-hmm. Well, let's stay with the Super Bowl and football because 2 months away, several suites at the big game in Los Angeles's SoFi Stadium have already been sold for a record $1 million. The previous high for the Super Bowl suite was $750,000. That was last year in Miami. This is according to NFL. That means that in one calendar year, the league has been able to bump up the price for the most expensive suites by 33%. The NFL goes on to say that despite SoFi Stadium having over 250 suites, there's a waiting list.
Wow.
And we don't even know who's playing.
Is Coral Digital on the waiting list?
I was going to say, you guys putting some money on one of those suites?
Corporate stuff?
It's got to be.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be. $1 million a suite.
Yeah, but it can also be one crazy millionaire who just wants to kick off his shoes.
Out there.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Mm.
You know anyone that might be headed that way? It's local?
God, I don't know. I guess... the Super Bowl's in, it's local. Somebody like Jimmy will have some connection somewhere.
Well, do we know where the game's like airing? Is it on Fox or NBC? Because I'm sure that, you know, they're kicking down suites to some of their, you know, premier shows or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. What's it air on, Max Pata? You can figure it out.
This is a far cry from, can our families come watch in a $33,000 stadium?
It's going to be NBC this year.
NBC. So not ABC.
Sorry, next year, Regina.
Oh, right. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I went to a Rams preseason game with my dad. The Coliseum was already 75 years old at that point. We just sat at the very top.
I've been there.
It was just baking. Cement. Just this is at night, freezing.
A stiff wind, blow you out.
Yeah, no luxury boxes there.
Well, let's go back to the nostalgia factor because this is happening as we record this, so I can't wait to give you the results tomorrow. Happy Days star Henry Winkler is auctioning off a treasure trove of his Fonz costumes. And that's, again, happening as we record this. This is for TCM Presents Hollywood Cool. This is a sale at Bonham's Auction House in L.A. So it's complete with the Arthur Fonzarelli outfit, the jeans, the Levi's, the white T-shirt, black engineer boots, leather jacket. It's expected to go for between $50,000 and $80,000, according to Bonhams. The jacket...
The whole outfit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The jacket is one of at least seven purchased for the show. That's according to the website. One of the jackets is in the Smithsonian, so they don't have that one. The silver Triumph motorcycle the Fonz rode throughout the 10-year run is also up for sale. That's expected to go between $80,000 and $120,000
by
itself.
Thoughts? First off, if anything is going the way this is going, they're all going to beat the high reserve number, the high estimate number, because that's just the economy's where it's at. People want stuff. I don't know how it works, but I say the stuff's going to go for more. Do you guys know the story that in the first season of Happy Days, Fonzie wore like a windbreaker?
Yeah, you pointed that out before. Was it a Letterman jacket or a windbreaker?
It was like a members-only jacket
or something. Yeah, but it wasn't the cool
leather. He wouldn't wear a Letterman's jacket because those are for
the
jocks.
That's a good point. Yeah,
he didn't wear a leather jacket.
Right.
And they wanted him in a leather jacket, but the network was like, it's too aggressive.
Yeah. Yes.
He's like a street tough.
These are quaint. Those are quaint times where literally the jacket on the 5'9" Jewish guy was considered a little crossing the line there.
Pushing the envelope.
I have to look it up, but what was the other thing that, like, the motorcycle could only appear in a scene when he was in full gear? Or there was something that, like, he had to be next to the motorcycle.
Hmm.
What was
that? I don't know. I mean, they
up.
Didn't have any, like, helmety stuff. I mean,
no.
Kind of wearing a jacket the businessman would wear on a weekend, you know?
Yeah.
Just kind of a windbreakery.
Sensible.
There was really nothing hoodlum about it or tough guy about it. It's so weird. It's just weird that the network would go, That's also a thing where networks need to give notes. And
right.
And I've been in a million of those meetings where you just went, the fuck? Who cares what jacket? No, he's a motorcycle guy. He's the hoodlum. He's the guy. He works as a mechanic, you know.
One executive had to be heard.
Doesn't need, and I swear to God, you sit in those rooms, I go, just give him that one. Just give it to him. There's a lot of like trading stuff. It's like, yeah, it's making our product a little shittier, but just give it to the retarded executive. just give it to him. There's a lot of that.
Right.
And it's like, okay, we'll swap out this joke with a slightly weaker joke because what's her name suggested or something. And it's like this weird trading process, but all you're doing is weakening the product, watering it down a little bit.
Yeah. And these are related because apparently he was only allowed to wear a leather jacket when he was riding his motorcycle.
Oh, that's it.
And then they finally relented.
You got to justify the wearing of leather.
He doesn't have to get off sometimes, right? A motorcycle.
Right, exactly.
He has to dismount.
Jesus
so we'll find out tomorrow what those sold for. This is a few days old, but did you hear this Clooney interview that everybody was talking about? He did an interview with The Guardian about the movie The Tender Bar because he directed it.
No. I heard he passed on $35 million. Is that the one we're talking about?
That's what we're talking about. So he in the interview, they said, you know, like, how do you know you have enough money? And he said he turned down this unidentified airlines offer down because, quote, it was associated with a country that, although it's an ally, is questionable at times. And so I thought, well, if it takes a minute away from me sleeping, it's not worth it. He consulted his wife about it. I have a guess.
What country?
Are we talking El Al, Israel?
Oh.
That's my guess. I mean, maybe Emirates Airline.
Seeing life through light blue colored lenses there, Gina.
My guesses are El Al or Emirates. But
I was thinking Emirates. I thought.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't think he'll ever say.
Israel's is weird because it tears the nation apart. But I'm like, I love Jews. I had a Jewish grandfather. I had the Jewish kids I knew at school were the only ones who kept their shit together. Everything was just everything else was a clusterfuck. I like Israel. I like Jews. I've always been that way. And their neighbors don't have a track record of a great history, so I'm just going to go with them. Doesn't mean they're not things you'd like to change, but just based on the neighborhood they're living in.
Boy, are there.
I'll put my money on the Jews. So I always think, oh, come on, Israel. But other people.
That could be naive.
Especially in Hollywood. Yeah. They're not down.
Yeah. So I'm very curious, but I doubt that'll ever be revealed. Do we have time for one more?
Yeah.
Okay. You and your unicycle, we all know it's a match made in heaven. Very cute, too, that you can ride a unicycle. But can you solve hundreds of Rubik's Cubes while you do it? Because that kid is now in the Guinness Book of World Records. 17-year-old Jesse Bradford from Canada. He broke the record by solving 300 Rubik's Cubes while riding.
I look at a Rubik's Cube like a fat guy looks at a chin-up bar.
No, thanks.
It's not like, never, ever.
You want to give it a shot? No. I'm good.
Beyond the realm of possibility.
And I can reach up. You can see my belly with the stretch marks on it. Yeah. And you watch me struggle.
Nobody wants that.
But I can just tell you now.
Not interesting.
Not happening. Like, well, I looked at that. I never owned a Rubik's Cube. And I'd see a couple of friends right around. I'd kind of look at it and go, I'm never going to do that.
Yeah, you could just take the stickers off.
Am I allowed to use my teeth?
Well, this
I think
kid,
I could do this.
This kid's got a little something called moxie because I watched his story and he's already into Rubik's Cubes. That was a given. And he looked up, you know, what kind of record could I break? And there was a unicycling one. So what did he do? He just taught himself to ride a unicycle. He decided I'll give that one a try. And to make it harder on you, to make it more sad, his father, they were like, father-son duo. He goes, I'm going to set up all the chairs. I'm going to set up the Rubik's Cubes. He hands it to him. He called Guinness. He got all that.
No.
He goes, you just focus on learning how to ride the unicycle. And he says there's even certain ways you need to scramble Rubik's Cubes for it to count for the world record.
Really?
They had to have three different angles, camera angles, for 2.5 hours. Like, this is like serious shit. I don't know. We have tape somewhere.
I looked at,
Hey, it's me.
I looked at my, we used to screen calls. I looked at my unicycle just laying on the floor in the living room yesterday. I zoomed in on it and went, so sad. Yeah. So sad. When I was a kid, I would have been my number one activity.
Shiny.
Every my house just walks right past. I brought it up to the living room. All right, sorry, we'll watch this.
Watch this guy. This is Dad.
After 2 hours, 13 minutes on the unicycle, and 300 solved Rubik's cubes later, uh-huh. Jesse beat the record.
Wow. Yeah. Pedaling around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I did. I took a picture of Phil, who's laying by the unicycle mix, Pat. I don't know if you have that Phil picture I sent you, but
the most interest anyone's garnered with the unicycle.
He literally just lays upside down.
Oh, my God.
On the middle of the floor. It's like, I didn't grab him and twist him or nothing. No one even bothered him. He's not even doing anything.
He fears nothing.
I find him just laying.
He's an alpha predator. Yeah. An apex predator.
Yeah. On his back. He just lays there on his back.
Damn.
It just gets in the way. And then the unicycle somewhere near him. But I do love this. I was with Sonny and Phil in my office last night, and Phil comes in. He uses his head like a ram, pops the door open. And Sonny was just like hugging, like bear hugging, like pulling him down. And he's like, I love Phil. He's a big dog. And like, my friends have dogs, but they're not big. Like, mm-hmm. Phil's got a big box head and his big jowls and everything. And I was like, I'm so in love with this because when I was a kid, I wanted a big dog. Yeah. Like, I wanted something like sleeps on your bed, rolls over, like you wrestle with him and stuff. And I just love that he was getting off on the fact that Phil was a big dog and he dug it. So, good on Phil.
I don't remember Sonny's reaction or if he even had one in the original Christmas video where little baby Phil came trotting out and Natalia cried tears of joy.
I think Sonny was smiling.
Yeah, I was going to say, did Sonny have thoughts on that? Because I don't even remember.
I don't remember. We have that video somewhere.
It's my favorite.
It's cute, but Phil...
Sonny didn't care.
Sonny didn't care. Sonny's he's not flappable.
Yeah.
I think he was actually like rattling off sports stats.
Do we have that, Ben?
We're looking.
Well,
now,
let me hit Trico, and we'll see if we can find that. Over a century ago, Trico was the first to make wiper blades. They've been one step ahead of Mother Nature ever since. Trico engineers study your specific driving conditions to make sure you're ready for anything, even if it actually rains cats and dogs. Phil hits the hood. You're going to have to pull over, man. Whatever the weather, Trico wipers maintain maximum windshield contact. It's getting rainy out there. It's getting sleety. It's getting snowy. Driving around at night. Need to see clearly. Mm-hmm. Very dangerous. Get yourself some good Trico wiper blades. No matter what your driving habits, you'll always find the right wiper blade for your vehicle. Trico, the future of wipers since 1917. To find a store near you and see the latest offers, you visit TricoCatsAndDogs.com. That is TricoCatsAndDogs.com. Do we have that, Vin? Let me find it. It's young Natalia. I put the bow on Phil.
A lot of wires exposed in that house.
So he's rattling off stats. And look at the baby wandering.
What the fuck is that?
Oh,
who's that?
A little waggy tail.
Push Phil down the, down the hall with the big bow on him.
What were you saying about a CP1?
Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Boy, how the tables have turned with that dog.
She don't want that big smelly beast in her room anymore.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Oh, Phil's the cutest.
Oh, my God.
Look at him pawing at her.
Look at that tail. Yeah,
sorry. Why are you crying? I'm happy. Tears of joy?
Smash cut to now. Get out!
Yeah.
Phil, beat it.
All right.
It's too
Poor
good.
Poor Phil. Phil goes where the getting's good, though. Yeah. I mean, he shows up. The cutest thing ever is he shows up at the football Sunday, and Cousin Sal brings his young kids. Mm. He's got a 7-year-old and a 9-year-old or whatever.
Perfect.
And they just chase Phil around.
Amazing.
And Phil gets the ball.
Tire him out.
And they love him. I mean, he's weighs more than they do. But I'll tell you the great thing. He picks up the tennis ball and they just put their hand right in his mouth and everything. He's got big old fangs on there and they're just pulling him around and he's
great.
Gentle.
Hey, I don't mean to, speaking of home videos, I want to bring up a sensitive subject, but you watch your wedding video yet?
Jesus, Brian.
No.
No, that's one of his bits.
No, you watch him when you kill yourself.
Oh.
So not yet.
I have a question.
Don't you put the shotgun, the toe in the shotgun holder?
That's when you watch it.
Follow-up question. No.
No, you watch it when you kill yourself.
We just got all our footage today if you guys want to come over and check it out.
Awesome. All right, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
All right, Wednesday, December 15th, coming up now. TJ Miller up there on stage at the Bray Improv, so you can check that out. I will be there doing Truth Yeller. We'll film it so you can watch it. And we're heading to Portland. Well, you guys know about that show, right?
Yeah.
We're going there on Helium.
Close out the year of the bank.
22nd, yeah, 23rd. And you can check out our chassis channel 687 on Pluto TV. Gary Sinise, yeah. GarySiniseFoundation.org for all the info. And until next time, Sam Crow for Mr. Skin and Gary Sinise and Gene and Bolt saying mahalo.
Well, I'd already been messing around, you know, for a while, but follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Catch him on Instagram and Facebook at Adam Carolla as well. Gina Grad's on the podcast, Easy Listening. Bald Brian's on the Film Vault. The rest of us are on the water cooler. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And let's sell out Brea. That's 1 week from tonight at the Brea Improv. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.